Taste your way through Napa Valley, California with WSJ Magazine and Indigare. Book this exclusive trip at indigare.com/WSJ Magazine or call 646-780-8383.
Here's your money briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen at the Wall Street Journal in New York. Pensions aren't the most exciting thing to talk about unless the money isn't there that's supposed to be coming to you. And that's a real problem facing public pensions. In a moment, we'll examine how the system got there. First, some money and market news you should know. The Journal's Heard on the Street team says the second quarter economic growth rate of 2.1% may be seen as a slowdown, but the economy may be doing just well enough to ward off a second interest rate cut by the Federal Reserve. Heard on the Street's Justin Lehart says the economic report highlighted the divide that has opened up between confident consumers and worried businesses. And while the Fed is worried that business jitters could bleed into other areas of the economy, most notably the job market, as long as the labor market stays strong and consumers keep spending, those factors will outweigh a potential second rate cut that would ease fears that a slowdown overseas is becoming contagious. And more than 10,000 people who hold cryptocurrency started getting letters from the IRS late last week. They're being warned about penalties for failing to report income or pay tax on transactions involving virtual currencies. In March of 2018, digital currency platform Coinbase provided data under a federal court order to the IRS on about 13,000 accounts, though the IRS won't confirm the letters being sent out stem from information supplied by Coinbase. For federal tax purposes, cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin are treated as investment property similar to stock shares or real estate.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why they've created Eno, the Capital One assistant that catches things that might look wrong with your credit card. Eno catches overtipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, and then sends an alert to your phone and helps you fix it. It's another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
What do American state and local pensions have to do with the finest crystal around? Well, pension funds may have had a tint of rose in their crystal balls when predicting the future, and that could be why, on average, they have less than 75% of assets on hand to fund future obligations. And Heard on the Street editor Spencer Jacob is here to explain. So, Spencer, we're talking about pensions for public workers, and this shortfall could be the result of rosy economic predictions that the pension funds managers make themselves?
That's right. So 75% doesn't sound that great, but 75% is what's based on their projections of how well they'll do. So there are a lot of people who have not a lot of people anymore. There used to be a lot of people who had pensions through companies, where a pension basically means that you know what you're going to get. You have a specific promise of what you're going to get. Most Americans have the reverse. You know what you contribute today. You might not contribute anything or not very much or not enough. And you count on that growing to some amount in the future that you can live on. If you're a public employee, there's some amount that might be taken out of your paycheck or might be nothing. Your employer contributes, and that's supposed to grow. And they show you an account every year of how well-funded it is. On average, it's 75%, but that's based on how well they think it's going to do. They apply a discount rate to the future. And those discount rates are basically provided by a bunch of consultants that they hire. The column that I wrote today points out how incredibly rosy those assumptions are.
And by misgauging the future, that could put pension funds in a position to be more risky in hopes of registering higher returns. And by taking on more risk, then you're clouding your future even more.
That's right. And you see that more and more, where they are saying, oh, we'd like to invest more in private equity. We'd like to invest more in hedge funds and things like that. Well, over the last 10 years, private equity's had a really nice run. That's something that is more and more appealing to hedge funds. They see something that's done well and they say, we'd like to put more cash into this thing because it's done so well. I think people know that, you know, past performance not only isn't an indicator of future performance, but past performance is an indicator that maybe some of the best returns are behind you, especially when lots of people are piling into something. That's the real danger with piling into private equity is that they're going to compound their problems, like a gambler who sort of, you know, doubles down, where you sort of, you lost enough and you're licking your wounds. Instead of doing that, you make a very risky bet in the casino. I'm not saying that they're going to lose all their money, but the likelihood that private equity is going to be, you know, there's no free lunches in investing. The mm-hmm. likelihood that private equity is going to be as good as it was in the last decade, given all the money, all the idle cash that's sitting there waiting to be spent, is not that good. So not a great thing to hear pension managers saying, and some are.
And regarding the future, as you point out in your column, there's a lesson here that for public pension managers, it's okay to admit that you were wrong.
It is and it isn't, right? I mean, it's okay to admit you're wrong. In any other endeavor in life, it's okay to admit you're wrong. The problem with some, not all pension fund managers, is that admitting you were wrong, they have to admit it very, very slowly. Take CalPERS, which I spoke with for the column. CalPERS is a huge California pension fund that has California municipalities as its clients. Now, unlike some pension funds where you can have just a huge deficit and it's all okay, they have a deficit, but if the deficit widens, then those municipalities have to actually pony up more cash. You can't say, Sacramento, you have to pay us, and San Francisco, you don't have to pay mm-hmm. us. They all mm-hmm. have to keep up. Otherwise, they're kind of shortchanging all the other municipalities in there. Now, if they were to suddenly say, you know what, the discount rate that we've been using, and they're among the more conservative ones, I have to say, but the discount rate we've been using is a little too rosy. We're going to knock that down by a percentage point. You'd basically have to have them pony up the equivalent of over $2,000 per California household.
Oh, wow.
If that were to happen. I mean, so, you know, that it a little difference in their assumptions makes a big, big difference. So what do they do if there's a year where they've kind of fallen short of where they want to be? Then they tell those municipalities and they smooth out that difference over multiple years, which on some level makes sense because you can't just go to cities that have, you know, all potholes to fill and yeah. policemen to pay and schools to operate and say, oh, you know, by the way, can I have like 30% of your budget this year to plug this hole? They just don't – you'd bankrupt them. You don't have the money. On the other hand, it makes it especially awkward to, you know, kind of look at the situation and say, you know what, there's no way that the math works here.
All right, that's Heard on the Street editor Spencer Jacob here in our studio. Spencer, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen in New York for The Wall Street Journal.